Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. My name is Tim Wildman. I work here and been away now from, I was out of the country. We went, took a tour group to Israel for, I was gone for 10 days total. Ed Vitagliano joining me this morning. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim. Welcome back.
Thank you, Fred Jackson.
Yes, Tim. We're excited about your trip.
Yeah, we had a wonderful group of folks, 150 folks, three different buses, and Wesley Wildman and Walker Wildman went with me, as did a couple of other our staff members. Yep. We had a great time with our folks, seeing Israel, the Holy Land. We do that once a year in March, and we're planning on going March 2024. We already got the date set, although I haven't changed the website yet. So, and there are a lot of people to go to Israel with that are do a great job, but if you want to go look into ours, we'll be going again in 2024, March 2024, and I'll be, if you want to send us an email, go to comments@afr.net and just say, send me information on the 2024 Holy Land tour when it's available. That'll be about 3 or 4 weeks from now. Yeah. So comments@afr.net, comments@afr.net is the email address, and just say, hey, send me the info when it's available on the 2024 trip. But yeah, great time. And, you know, they're having some political unrest in Israel, having nothing to do with the Palestinian v. Jew, conflict that's in the news a lot. They're having a political unrest because of between Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister, and I don't know, 50% of the country. I can't go into great detail about what all the issues are, but we saw some demonstrations there, when we were.
Yeah, my understanding is that Benjamin Netanyahu's son made waves over the weekend by suggesting that the U.S. State Department is funding the rioters.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, listen, nowadays, when it comes to the Biden administration, who is always seems to be pushing for a deal with Iran, that I think is some of what, I forget what Benjamin Netanyahu's son's name is, but when it comes to the Biden administration, I would put nothing past.
Yeah. You know, I miss some people here while I was away, but more than anything, I missed fresh popcorn.
Well, that makes Fred and I feel pretty good there, Tim. Some things you missed, but popcorn.
I missed some people.
Yeah.
But popcorn, got it right here. Hey, a lot to talk about today, and not a lot of it's good news, quite frankly. We here in Mississippi, where our home base is, we're in Tupelo for American Family Association, American Family Radio. Our state experienced some real tragedy over the weekend, Fred, with tornadoes.
Yeah, by far, and I'm sure people have seen the pictures now, Rolling Fork, Mississippi. Probably not on a map that you've looked at lately. Small community, the Mississippi Delta, under 2,000 people, residents there. It's about 50 miles west of Jackson, if you can get a little picture in your mind, north of Vicksburg, in that area. I was just reading a quote from the mayor. They barely turned on the sirens on Friday night when the tornado hit and blew the siren down to warn people. But if you've seen the drone shots, and they've been, Fox News has had them on the weekend, other news outlets, it looks like a bomb obliterated that little town. That's the only way to describe it. There are 18-wheeler trucks on top of houses. It's just, but still, it's always amazing. There may be two houses still standing, but everything else around is gone, the way the tornadoes work. But the governor of the state, Tate Reeves, has been there during the weekend, and this is basically how he described things in talking to people there. Cut number two.
And what I would tell you is there's really two emotions that hit me personally and hit the people in these communities. The first emotion is one of heartbreak, just absolute loss of life. These are close-knit, small communities where everyone's family or a friend, and so those who lost their life are known by everyone in the community, so there's certainly heartbreak. But there's also a sense of resiliency and a sense of optimism for the future. And when these things have so much devastation, and in our state there is a lot of devastation, people show up from all over the state of Mississippi and people show up from all over America to provide help, and it gives you optimism for the future.
Yeah, so a couple of things there. You know, there's this, obviously, the devastation. Small community like this, if you can imagine, your relatives, your grandparents, your parents, your kids, the people who teach school, the people that run the shops downtown. You know, there's 25 people that lives that have been lost, many other people injured. So you can imagine in a small community what they're going through. However, on the flip side, as the governor made mention of, there is hope. Already ministries like Samaritan's Purse and others are already moving in. The President of the United States has declared a state of emergency there. So all of the governmental resources are coming to bear to help them start to rebuild. But I'm sure there's still a state of shock there in that community. But help is already there and more on the way.
Well, and it also hit Amory, Mississippi, which is just south of where our flagship station is now.
About 20 miles from here.
Yeah. Yes. Now, as far as I know, there was no loss of life, but that city got hit. The north part of that city got hit as well by the same storm.
Yeah, by the way, 8 Days of Hope, a ministry people who listen to AFR are familiar with, Steve Tiber is going to be on with us in just a few minutes to talk about their response. Mm-hmm. And people may be listening saying, how can I help? Steve will tell you how
right. You
can help with recovery. But so Amory, Mississippi, as you said, hit not as hard, but still some devastation. Our own Steve
Jordahl,
yep. Our own Steve Jordahl is he was hiding in his house praying for his life because he lives right nearby,
just to the north of Amory.
Yeah, just a mile or so. I don't know how far he was from where the tornado touched down.
Mm-hmm.
But he was sharing that with us in our staff meeting this morning, our prep meeting for this show. And he's going to be talking more about that when he comes on with us. But, tornadoes, like hurricanes, are, what do you call it? Their strength is you have an F1, which is a lesser tornado. Then you have an F5, which is a most powerful kind of tornado.
Mm-hmm.
with high wind speeds. And so what they were reporting leading up to Friday night, at least 2 or 3 days in advance, was there was a part of the south, I guess, North Louisiana, parts of Mississippi and Alabama, sort of an oval shape that went through that part of the country that were, they prime targets for what they call supercell tornadoes,
right?
Which is your F4s, F5s, which do obliterate buildings, all kinds of buildings,
mm-hmm.
and certainly homes that were not brick. I don't know. Maybe that kind of storm could even, you get 150, 60, 70 mile an hour winds.
Mm-hmm.
Can even knock down brick homes. But I'm just saying that was predicted, and that's exactly what happened with the Rolling Fork, Mississippi.
Yes.
And the Amory. They were powerful, powerful tornadoes.
Right.
You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Joining us now is our good friend Steve Tiber, president of 8 Days of Hope. And Steve's team already on the ground in Amory, Mississippi, and Steve is going to tell us what the plans are, because a lot of our folks who listen volunteer with 8 Days of Hope. Steve, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hope you're doing well.
Steve, are you in Buffalo, or are you en route to Mississippi, or where are you today?
Yeah, well, I'm in New York today. Tomorrow I'll be in Amory, and I'll be in the area through the weekend. And, you know, our leaders and equipment and volunteers have been there since Saturday, and this is going to be a marathon. There's no sprint here, but we're our boots are on the ground, and we've set up a command center. We've opened up volunteering, and already in 12 hours, 200 volunteers from 20 states are headed to Amory, with many more coming. So we're excited to help some of these families out. This is a tough situation.
What are you going to be doing there?
You know, already we've been blessed with some really nice equipment. We have 6 Bobcats on site, multiple lift trucks that can take trees off of the roof of homes, so you can tarp roofs and protect the elements, the things inside from further damage. You know, we're clearing off property. We're just helping families right now. We plan in the next day or two to have some laundry trailers to give people the dignity of washing clothes. Right now, there's no laundromats that are operable in that area. And of course, families have had their homes damaged, which includes, of course, all their appliances. So our goal is to be there right through Easter weekend. We're probably going to take 1 day or 2 days off with Easter down the road, but we're going to be hosting volunteers for many, many weeks in Amory, Mississippi.
How do people go and find out more information about volunteering themselves?
Yeah, thank you so much for asking that question. So since we announced yesterday, again, a couple hundred people have already signed up. Some people are bringing some heavy equipment with them as well. It's all done on our website. Our website is pretty simple. It's 8 days, that's plural, 8daysofhope.com. Read the FAQs. Now, you're going to see another outreach as well, something that we're planning in May in Fort Myers, help families rebuild their homes after Hurricane Ian. But right now, just scroll down that main page, read the FAQs, volunteer online. You do need to be 16. This is a live disaster site with some, you know, some situations that are super safe. We just lowered that age from 18 to 16, so this will be our first trip. We've lowered that to 16. But we have leaders in the equipment. You just have to get there. It's free. We provide food and lodging. You might leave exhausted, but I'm telling you, you're going to make some lifelong friends. You're going to be a huge blessing to some of these families in need.
Hey, Steve, it's Ed here. When you're talking about the laundry trucks, one of the things that amazes me about 8 Days of Hope is that you and your leadership team over the years have been given the wisdom to know exactly what people are going through and what can help. I guess if you haven't been through it yourself, maybe you don't exactly know what people are feeling or experiencing, but you know how to help, because that washing clothes is not something I would have thought about, but
sure,
it makes so much sense that you guys have realized that when people have lost everything or most of what they own, the struggles that they have to try to regain their footing are pretty difficult. What are some of the other things you do when you come into a disaster area like that? You feed people. I mean, what are some of the other things that people might want to know about your ministry, 8 Days
sure.
of Hope?
Sure. A lot of people know us as the organization that will tarp a roof, do chainsaw work, and then, you know, 6 months later, come back and help you rebuild. And we hope we can do that later this year in Amory. One of the things that we've done this past couple of days that we haven't shared, you're the first to hear this, is you know, there's a big water issue still in Amory, hoping that it will work itself out in the next day or two. But just through our relationships that God has blessed us with, we were able to bring in a water tank truck, and it's actually at the hospital, providing the hospital locally with water. Now, you and I would never think that, you know, something like that would be needed, because you just assume water would keep running. But again, doing what we've been doing the last 18 years and having some amazing partners that cover our fixed costs, like American Family Radio. I mean, you're one of our 18 partners, and you allow us to do what we do. And so thankful. So yes, right now water is being provided at the local hospital at no charge, of course. We're going to be offering food in the area as well. If someone's in need, we'll be set up at Meadowood Baptist Church starting tomorrow with volunteers. Our leaders are there. A laundry truck is coming in. We've got some heavy-duty equipment that's being used today and will be used for the next couple of weeks. So a lot of different ways you can help out. We have generators available. So again, just looking forward to helping out as many families as possible.
What's the website again, Steve?
Yeah, it's 8daysofhope.com. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. like our pages. If you need assistance, this is really important because I know even though you're a national ministry and people know you around the world, if you live in Northeast Mississippi or have a loved one in Amory that is looking for help, they can email us at rapidresponse@8daysofhope.com, or they can contact us through the website. We'll get them on the list and do the best we can.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate you, brother.
God bless you guys. Appreciate your support and your partnership.
Okay. Steve Tiber, 8 Days of Hope. Yes, Fred.
Our own Steve Jordahl, as you mentioned, lives in the Amory area. He suffered some property damage at his house, but he went out yesterday and he talked to one of the 80-year-old survivors in Amory. And I wanted you to hear her testimony. We've heard other people talk about it, but she lived through it on Friday night. Her name is Miss Anita, cut number 9.
The siren, she went off by the tons, and I never hear them in my house. And so I got up and I thought, well, I was sitting in a chair and it was about 11 o'clock and they said the storm was coming. And all at once, everything got quiet and I run to the back door and it was like ice falling. Like hail or something. It was just blowing. You couldn't open the door. And people were knocking on the door, wanting to know if I was okay.
Did you have to get a, did you have a tornado safe place that you went to?
Well, I didn't go to one, but it's in the bathroom.
Yeah.
In the hall.
So.
But I didn't go. I just sat there and.
It must have been terrifying.
No. It just. I was in another world, I tell you. It just, you don't know what to do.
Well, it's 11 p.m. at night, and a lot of folks are in bed. And, you know, I don't know if that's the case with her or not, but, you know, when they hit in the middle of the night like that, a lot of, listen, when you live in a part of the country that is where tornadoes are common, the Midwest, the Heartland, the Southeast in particular, I wouldn't say you get seared, but you don't. Tornado watches don't make people budge.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So now sirens get your attention, and she was mentioning that sirens went off. So you have these loud blasters across towns where tornadoes are, as I say, are common, that send out these sirens. It's kind of like bomb shelter,
right?
Siren sounds. So they're eerie, really. But I think she's saying she just heard it. So that I don't think they had much warning.
No.
And for people maybe who were in bed or getting ready to go to bed, you know, they probably didn't have much warning at all.
I didn't know there were tornadoes till I woke up the next morning. We live out in the country a little bit, so even if sirens go off in the town nearby, we rarely hear anything like it. I usually wake up pretty early and check Fox News, and it was talking about the tornado and the deaths in my state. So like to your point, you kind of get used to that intrinsic danger during certain times of the year, but I had no idea until the next day.
There was actually two waves around 8:30 on Friday night. They were warning people in Oxford, Mississippi, the home of University of Mississippi, you know, because kids are out on Friday night. These university kids are downtown in the square,
right.
And they're warning people because there was one headed towards Oxford. I saw live shots from a reporter who was holed up in one of the fire stations there, and it looked very serious. I mean, the trees were bent over. This one that hit was the second wave that went through Rolling Fork and Amory.
Earlier in the evening, you had the Rolling Fork, Mississippi tornado, which wiped out the whole community. It was like 2,000 people live there. Is that what you said?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
And then 3 hours later, 2 hours later,
number two,
it comes through and touches down in Amory, Mississippi. And anyway, it was very sad to hear the stories that are coming out about the death and destruction. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We encourage you to Check out 8daysofhope.com if you want to help volunteer with their efforts. I think they're going to be focused primarily on Amory, Mississippi, again, which is about 20, 25 miles from where we sit. You know, it's a beautiful spring day for a lot of the country today, and I'm happy to see it.
Right. Right.
I'm ready for some warm weather, some nice weather. But those folks are going to be, you know, dealing with
weeks and months of putting together their lives back.
Imagine your home being gone.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Well, just what Steve Tiber was talking about, you don't think about things like, where do we wash our clothes?
Right.
You know, not only do we not have appliances anymore, the laundromat's gone. You know, all those kind of things you just take for granted.
Yep. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Fred, and we thank you for listening to AFR. Next story, Fred.
Well, we kind of put aside all the political stuff during the weekend because tornadoes really dominated the news. But politics is back. The grand jury in New York dealing with the Trump case is back sitting today. Back last week, Tim, when you were away in Israel, it was almost on a daily basis we were wondering if they were going to render a decision. And then they suspended the grand jury for 2 days. We were wondering what was happening there.
But when I left the country, President Trump had said he will be arrested on Tuesday.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Never.
That didn't happen.
No.
No. In fact, they didn't sit on that Tuesday. Then they didn't sit on the Wednesday afterwards. And they suspended the session last Thursday. So today, apparently, they're meeting again. Now, leading up to all of this, there's been a lot of stories and speculation. We were just looking at a quote from a spokesman for the Trump campaign, speculating that perhaps no charges, the grand jury is not going to recommend a charge. I don't know. That's just a spokesman for the Trump campaign. Last week, there was talk that, former President Trump was going to be arrested, fingerprinted, and that he was going to have all kinds of cameras there, likely to turn, if that was to happen, into campaign ads, all of those sorts of things. So there's been much to do about that. But on the weekend, the former president was out campaigning. He was in Waco, Texas. And that made some news for kind of a strange reason, because at one point the former president kind of mocked the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, and poking fun at him, and the crowd went silent. Various reports of reporters that went to that campaign rally in Waco, Texas, nobody responded to that. So there's a lot of talk about that this morning, the tension that keeps building between the former president and the governor of Florida.
And in contrast, I did also read the reports about the rally that when the former president said, and I'm leading in the poll numbers, then the crowd got back into it. But there were reports. I don't think that even the fans, the supporters of President Trump, want discord between him and the Florida governor. So it's hard to get into people's minds as to what they were thinking or feeling when he said that. I wasn't there at the rally, but I think that would be expected.
Yeah.
It's one thing. In other words, one thing for the President Trump to mock someone like Hillary Clinton,
yes,
who the audience already doesn't like. It's a little bit hairier if you're going to mock someone that they do like and appreciate.
So you're saying when he went after DeSantis, they didn't clap?
No.
We'll be back momentarily with more of Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Stay with us.
Prior to birth, children need our help. Read A Pastor's Notes, God Calls the Church to Stand Boldly for Life by Pastor Joseph Parker.
We are called this day to stand for the innocent and speak out on their behalf.
This collection of essays by Pastor Joseph challenges us to take a public stand to protect the lives of the unborn. A Pastor's Notes is available now at resources.afa.net.
The body of Jesus Christ must speak up.
We live in a day when America's families are under attack like never before.
Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of the American Family Association.
The war against biblical principles rages on numerous fronts. The internet, Hollywood, Washington, D.C., America's corporate boardrooms, and the list goes on. At American Family Association, we're committed to standing against the enemies of God, the enemies of your family. And we recognize it's an impossible task without God's favor and your partnership. Thank you for being faithful to pray for this ministry, to give financially, and to respond to our calls for activism. What you do on the home front is crucial to what we do on the battlefront. We praise God for your faithfulness, and may He give us many victories in the battles ahead as we work together to restore our nation's biblical foundations.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stern. Stand by for news and commentary next.
My goal as a teacher is to impart knowledge and then be able then for them to take it and turn it into wisdom. As we teach, I think, okay, 5 years down the road, how will the material that I am teaching them really affect their lives and their careers?
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically-centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes.
The Associated Press wrote a story the other day about how Uber and Lyft drivers are using their personal vehicles to promote Christianity. In many cases, the drivers play Christian music or listen to sermons. They see their work as a sort of mobile Christian ministry, sharing the good news with their passengers. It was only a matter of time for the Freedom From Religion Foundation to hit a speed bump. They claim the drivers are discriminating against atheists, and they want Uber and Lyft to implement policies that would forbid drivers from sharing their faith. They fired off letters to both companies accusing drivers of proselytizing, missionized against their will, is how the angry atheist described it. You know, it seems to me with all the road rage on America's highways these days, even the atheist crowd would welcome a calming and inspirational presence on our roadway. There's a reason why Carrie Underwood asked Jesus to take the wheel and not an atheist. I'm Todd Starnes.
Beloved, we are now children of God, and what we will be has not yet been revealed. We know that when Christ appears, we will be like Him, for we will see Him as He is. And everyone who has this hope in Him purifies himself just as Christ is pure. 1 John 3, 2 and 3.
American Family Radio. This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thank you for listening. Hope you're having a nice day. If you want to send us an email, the address is comments@afr.net, comments@afr.net. We've talked about the tornadoes that ravaged a couple of communities in Mississippi over the weekend. So we also talked to Steve Tiber from 8 Days of Hope. Check their website out, 8daysofhope.com, how you can help volunteer to minister to the victims. If you would like to know what 8 Days of Hope is up to. Then, of course, we talked some here about the rally that former President Trump had in Waco, Texas over the weekend. And Fred was mentioning the fact that when in his talk, his speech to those who were in attendance, and it was watched on the internet too, President Trump went after Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida. Trump said that Governor DeSantis, when he was running for governor the first time, that he came to Trump. And ask for his beg for his endorsement in tears.
No, that's what he said.
Huh?
That's what he said.
I think imitated.
Yeah, he was basically mocking him.
Yeah,
he was mocking Governor DeSantis, and then just ran him down with all kind of stuff there for about 5 minutes. I don't. I, It's still a mystery to me why President Trump feels the need to run down Governor DeSantis, but he does. Maybe he feels like he's a threat to his Republican nomination, but he obviously does. But Fred said the crowd, and this was reported other places, while they were cheering for President Trump and a lot of things that he said, when President Trump decided to go after Governor DeSantis, the crowd went silent. So,
yeah, mocking him.
Huh?
Kind of a dripping mocking tone apparently was used.
By President Trump?
Yes.
That's rare. President Trump also late last week, in an effort to, I guess, to win the PR battle with Bragg, is he a district attorney in New York?
Yeah, that is Manhattan. Correct.
Yes.
Okay, so Bragg is going after President Trump. I guess the grand jury you talked about in New York trying to get an indictment against the former president on hush money that he paid to
two women,
and whether that was tied to whether that money came from the campaign or something. Of course, President Trump spoke to that on Saturday night too. You know, when we talk about this stuff, folks, it's tawdry, and it's hard to even talk about it in a realistic way because we know we have children listening. So it's very difficult. Anyway, President Trump talked about the woman that sued him. And now President Trump won that lawsuit. I think Stormy Daniels is the woman's name. She owes him money for legal fees. But President Trump said in the speech on Saturday night that he never really liked her, that woman, Stormy Daniels. Called her a name, called her horse face, I think is what he called her.
Yep.
I don't know why he wanted to spend time on that. Whoever told him that was a good idea. But anyway, it's one problem that President Trump may have, although I do think he's being politically attacked.
Oh, yeah. Bragg? Oh, yeah. That's,
no question about that's it.
Clear.
But I don't think President Trump's helping himself when he puts out pictures with like your.
Yeah, I mean, what on Friday on his Truth Social account, President Trump put out a picture of himself with a baseball bat. By the way, he does look good. He's been on a diet. I think keto. I think he's lost some weight. But anyway, he had a picture of himself with a bat, and the picture adjacent to it was a picture of the Manhattan District Attorney, Alvin Bragg, with his hands up. And also Donald Trump said that, talked about the potential death and destruction if he is charged for a crime by Alvin Bragg. So that was controversial over the weekend because the image with the bat, I think, has brings to mind a scene from a movie with in the Untouchables, which had Kevin Costner in it, and Robert De Niro plays Al Capone, and he holds a baseball bat while he's speaking, and then beats somebody to death at a luncheon or something with some of his lieutenants. Al Capone, in other words. So it was a controversial picture, and has netted him some criticism, even from the New York Post, which is conservative. And so over the weekend, listen, the former president hasn't asked me, my opinion, obviously. I think he would do far better, Donald Trump, if he would talk only about what he did as president and how Joe Biden has fouled up the country since he got elected in 2020. The former president, I think, would do far better in terms of polling and drawing supporters to himself if he said, listen, Governor DeSantis has done a great job in Florida. He's young. He's got time. But I faced the dragon for 4 years, and I know what I'm doing. Everything I said while I was in office, everything I've said since then has been right. The Biden administration has been wrong. That should be the message for Donald Trump. He's not going to help himself by going after, he's not going after Vivek
Ramaswamy or Nikki Haley, but if he did turn against them, that's not really going to help him. He's got a strong message if he'll stick to it.
But he won't, because he's obsessed with Governor DeSantis.
Mm-hmm.
And he has been for like last 4 to 6 weeks. And I don't think he's going to stop. You know, now, you don't know, I've talked to a lot of people who are admirers of President Trump. And when he started going after Governor DeSantis, they were saying, what is he doing? What is his point? Why is he doing this? And I've talked to a lot of people who said, you know, that's when he lost me. I'm talking about President Trump. When he started smearing, it's a smear campaign.
Uh-huh.
Like, this isn't just the rough and tumble of normal politics. This is a smear campaign that President Trump's trying to do on Governor DeSantis.
Yeah.
I mean, folks, listen. I know some of you are going to say, well, quit talking negatively about President Trump. All we're doing is reporting what President Trump is saying about Governor DeSantis over and over and over again. And maybe there are people within the Trump campaign who can tell him that's a losing strategy.
Right.
But it doesn't seem to appear so at this point. It appears like President Trump is going to continue to go after. As I said, it's one thing to criticize policy. That's fair. If President Trump wants to say, I disagree with Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, on A, B, C, D, E, on things he believes or wants to do or has done in Florida, that isn't what President Trump's doing. President Trump is saying that Governor DeSantis was a groomer when he was a high school teacher. He was trying to...
Even insinuated, didn't he, that he might even be... that Governor DeSantis might even be interested in men?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That's wrong.
Huh?
That's wrong. You shouldn't be doing that.
Well, we'll see what happens. Now, there are polls all over the place. The president has received, former President Trump has received some good news in the polls the last 2 or 3 weeks, I think in large part due to people sympathizing with him being politically attacked by the Democrat DA in New York.
Right.
But there are polls, too, that show that Governor DeSantis has gained ground.
Yeah, two new polls from a top Republican polling firm that Axios has been publishing find that Governor DeSantis is running more competitively with the former president. Surveys conducted by Public Opinion Strategies from March 21st to the 23rd found DeSantis leading Trump by 8 points, 45% to 37%.
Where?
In a head-on match. This was in Iowa.
That's the first primary state.
Yes.
When is that, by the way? Is that like January?
It's
or
January.
January, yeah. They hold their caucuses. And then in New Hampshire, DeSantis and Trump tied at 39-39.
Right.
And those two polls.
That's in New Hampshire?
New Hampshire, yes.
Yeah. Well, we're a long way till January, but then again, we're not.
Nope.
I think Governor DeSantis will probably announce in May, would be my guess.
As soon as the session is over in Florida.
In Florida. Then he'll start traveling the country,
campaigning.
Mm-hmm. And
in August will be the first debate of the candidates.
Is it in August?
In Wisconsin, yes, when they hold their national convention. There's going to be a debate between the candidates.
What, this year?
Okay. Yes.
Oh.
This August.
And there's
they don't hold their convention in this August.
No, pardon me. That'll be next August. But I believe there's a debate later
before
on.
Before the primaries.
Yes, before the primaries.
Yeah, but that seemed to me like it would be like in the fall, maybe.
Yes.
Something like that. Four announced candidates right now, right on the Republican side.
And we're still, the expectation
No, three.
Yeah.
Three announced, and Governor DeSantis is expected to announce.
Right.
Yep. But Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina, serious parent, talk about him. Former Vice President Pence, Mike Pompeo, former Secretary of State.
These are all names that have been thrown out there that might enter.
Yes.
The race.
Yes.
But you know what? I'm going to say what we all know. Those names don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
With all due respect, to those are fine people that you just mentioned. Many of them served President Trump.
Yes.
But it's going to come down to Governor DeSantis and President Trump.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be hard to break out of that second tier.
Right.
You're going to have Trump, DeSantis, and then you're going to have that second tier. You probably have a third tier. you know, 1%ers, but you'll have some in the 8 or 9%. But it's going to be hard to break out of that.
Right.
Because most of those people are known, but the two people who are very well known, first and foremost, is the former president and then Governor DeSantis.
And a lot of people are just now learning. They've heard Governor DeSantis's name, but they're just now learning more about him, I guess. And once he announces, he'll go on the campaign trail, you know, and try to woo voters right. to his side. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We have a guest, Ed?
Yes, we do. We want to welcome, I think we've had Brandon on this show before, Brandon Showalter, who's a journalist and has a podcast with the Christian Post. Brandon, welcome back to Today's Issues.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Well, Brandon, we wanted to talk to you about the issue of the transgender movement.
One of our favorite topics.
Yeah, one of our favorite topics.
Yeah, we just can't get enough of transgenderism.
We can't escape it.
Yeah.
Did the Christian Post just have a conference or a meeting on this subject?
We did. We had our first ever public event at First Baptist Church of Dallas in Dallas, Texas on Thursday. It was very much a success. We had a panel. It was comprised of contributors from our first, you know, investigative podcast series, documentary style podcast series called Generation Indoctrination. And then a second panel with Dr. Jeffers, the pastor of First Baptist, his daughter, Julia, and then my co-author of our recent ebook, Exposing the Gender Lie, with Dr. Jeff Myers, my co-author of Summit Ministries. Season 2 of Generation Indoctrination was just, the first episode was just released yesterday, and it's the audio ebook of that book. It's the audio version of the ebook, and that we're releasing it as Season 2 of Generation Indoctrination. There will be a bonus episode about a documentary film called Dead Name that I was also a participant in. But the Christian Post is being very loud and very bold about this issue because our children are being subjected to some of the most horrific medical and child abuse the world has ever seen, that of trying to become the opposite sex, which is, of course, physically impossible.
Brandon, I know you've I've read your stuff for years with the Christian Post. You're an excellent writer. And do you do your homework when you write on whatever subject you're writing about? But so let me ask you this, just, and this is a little unfair because this is kind of a historical question, but I can't think of any movement in history that has erupted more suddenly in full-blown form than the transgender movement and has captured so many of our institutions so quickly.
Yeah.
Can you think of anything or just speak to that issue? It's really extraordinary.
Well, I do hear that all the time. Like, how did this happen so fast? Don't doctors take a Hippocratic oath to first do no harm? And I often say when I'm doing interviews like this that I often feel like I have to preface it with, no, this is not tinfoil hat conspiracy theory. This is all really real. And when you actually dare to look and fall down the rabbit hole, as I have, you realize just the constellation of societal forces that have led to this institutional ideological capture that you mentioned. I think the best way to think about this is, well, as Christians, we are mindful of the reality of spiritual warfare in Ephesians 6, and that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against powers, principalities, and spiritual wickedness in high places. But as the Lord Jesus likes to say, did say, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And when you realize just how much the medical industry is intent on drugging and maiming children because it's a huge income stream for them, a lot of things start to fall into place. And there have also been forces within the academic world where this, you know, queer theory that has just been drilled into our children's brains in public school now, that's been gestating for decades. And it has all led, given rise to this explosion that we have seen unfold in the last 5 years, especially the last decade. It's really been terrible, but it's really ratcheted up in intensity in the last five. It's really scary, diabolical stuff. And that's not me being hyperbolic. It's really terrible what's happening to our children. God have mercy on us.
Brandon, Tim here. There's been the transgendered movement has been in, you know, coming full force, as Ed said, and you talked about. However, there's been a pushback too, especially in red states, to stop this from. You want to talk about that? Go ahead.
Well, the first one that I know of happened in Arkansas back in 2021, where the Republican legislature passed a bill called the SAFE Act to restrict and give people a right of action whether or not detransitioners to sue, extending the statute of limitations, I believe. That was the first to happen. They tried it the year before, but it failed in South Dakota. But they got it done. They actually had to override the then Republican Governor Asa Hutchinson's veto. But then since then, especially in this year, we've had other states join that first state of Arkansas. I think Alabama also came maybe in 2022. There was Arizona. But now, yes, Utah, South Dakota, I believe Oklahoma has a bill. Nebraska is considering a bill. Mississippi and Tennessee have passed these bills. I think that it's really good. I don't know what the best legislative fix is. There's different approaches they've taken. I think some bills have been like Arkansas's, where they extend the statute of limitations, give people a right of action to sue, and make this gender industry too financially cost prohibitive for the doctors to do this to young people. Or there are some, I think, that remove the doctor's license if they do it. Or there's criminal penalties. I mean, there's a couple different minutia in various states and the approaches they'll take. We'll have to see if they withstand court challenges, which are already in motion. But the great thing about it is that now this conversation, it's no longer me and the Christian Post just screaming into the void with a few other voices. This is becoming a national conversation in light of all of the states that are finally trying to take action against this and protect children.
What was it the other day? It was a big international sports authority who came out and said, no, we're not going to allow girls. We're not going to allow boys to play girls' sports. And what do you know? What was that?
There was a major sporting organization that made a policy. The name of the association escapes me at the moment, but you're correct. And that was big news because, you know, up until that time, I think I'd only ever seen one other sporting association. I think it was an American weightlifting that had maintained, you know, single sex sports. But this has captured sporting organizations. And for that sporting group to say, no, we're not going to do it, indicates the shift that's taking place, I think, on these issues.
World Athletics.
That's right. Is
the name of it. And they, quote unquote, tighten rules on transgender women athletes. And it's women's track and field events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, Brandon, where can we read about this?
Well, all of our reporting, ChristianPost.com. If you are interested in downloading the free ebook, Jeff Myers and I wanted this to be a free resource for anyone who's interested. Go to ChristianPost.com/ebook/gender-lie. We've got news article about the Dallas panel. My colleague Ian Giotti wrote a great article. And please do check out our podcast, Generation Indoctrination, Inside the Transgender Battle. It's wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, all is on all platforms. We do a very comprehensive overview. And indeed, not all of our contributors to that podcast series are even Christians, because the truth is true no matter who says it. And we've got a broad range of voices, and I think people are going to be very informed if they listen to it.
Brandon Showalter, journalist and podcaster with the Christian Post, has been on with us. Thank you, Brandon. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Okay. A lot of states are fighting back against this push.
Yeah. But also Republicans in the House. They just passed a parental rights, a Bill of Rights bill. And so we're seeing this backlash, positive backlash, against all of this junk that's happening out there. And we were talking with Tiffany Justice the other day. She's co-founder of Moms for Liberty. And she says the Senate needs to take this up. That's going to be Brent, cut number six.
The Senate should absolutely be willing to hear the Parents' Bill of Rights, because parents across the country are demanding it. I mean, I think we've seen, I went and testified in front of a subcommittee of the Judiciary, brought hundreds of handwritten letters with me from parents who are very concerned about their children's education and what's happening in our public schools. So, you know, I think we want to see transparency. Americans want accountability. The Senate should absolutely take up the bill and talk about if there are concerns that they have, let's hear them. If there are amendments that should be made, then let's hear them. But, you know, I think Americans are calling for this Parents' Bill of Rights, and it's right for the Senate to take it up and take it seriously.
So the Parents' Bill of Rights was passed in the House of Representatives.
Yes.
Along party lines, right?
Yes.
Right. The Democrats voted against it.
Mm-hmm.
And she's talking about, has it moved over to the Senate yet then?
Yes. Well, I think it either has or it will.
Or it will. But Chuck Schumer is already dissing it. He says...
What's the Democrat opposition? What are they saying that they object to primarily?
Well, I think one of the problems, and this is why the distinction between the two parties, the gap is growing bigger all the time. Schumer, the White House, most Democrats, most Democrat-run states, they're all in. On trans rights. All right, they are not
including boys playing girls sports. Right,
exactly. It's amazing. Feminist groups,
right,
which are normally out there,
right,
banging the drum for right. girls and for women's rights, silent.
Yeah, you would think they would be wanting to protect women's rights. This is what J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter series,
who's back at it.
She's a liberal.
Yes,
yeah. She's a liberal. Okay, and she's been getting the wrath of the, I won't say all the LGBTQ community, but a large part of it, mm-hmm. especially the trans activists, because she just says the obvious, that there is a biological distinction between a male and a female.
Right.
That's basically all she said.
Right.
And for that, they have just come down on her.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm saying even if you're a liberal, you're going to be attacked by these people if you in any way, shape, or form disagree with their agenda.
Well, but, also,
yeah, I'm sorry. But here's the thing. Democrat mom and dads who have daughters
right.
in female sports.
Right.
This is what happened in Loudoun County. It's what happened in Virginia a few years right. ago. Democrats yeah. voted for the Republican government.
Yeah.
They voted them in
yeah.
because they're standing up for their daughters.
Right.
Well, you also have the left. I absolutely agree that they're all in on the ideology and the movement, promoting the transgender movement. But you also have the left whose way of looking at the world is that teachers are the real experts. Parents are idiots. Now, they're not going to put it that way, but that's what they think.
Very close to what you're saying.
Though. Yes. Yes. They think teachers know best, even about your kids.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you have places like Minnesota, California. So we have the opposite of what you're talking about, Tim, but we were discussing with Brandon Showalter, that you have red states trying to hold the line on this. You have blue states who are pushing this to the wall. They are saying Minnesota, for example, is considering a bill that would take kids away.
Yes.
From parents, if the parents disagree with their child, quote unquote, transitioning
yes.
into another gender.
Yes.
And also becoming a sanctuary state.
Mm-hmm.
That if your parents won't take you to because you live in a red state or because they disagree with you transitioning and you want to transition, you come to Minnesota. We'll pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have to, we'll take your kids away.
Yeah.
Take the kids away. So you have on the left. Those two motivations. We believe in the transgender ideology, and we believe that teachers and other quote-unquote experts are the ones who should be making these decisions. Parents, you're out.
Yeah.
You're odd man out.
Right. Like a lot of issues, it's coming down to a red state, blue state.
Mm-hmm.
It's how you view the world, and it's rooted in your belief about God.
Yes.
That's why J.K. Rowling is getting slammed by these transgender true believers, because their view is, I decide what my life is. If I want to call myself a girl or I want to call myself a boy, no one gets to tell me otherwise, not J.K. Rowling, not God.
Steve Jordahl, our own Steve Jordahl, he was just a mile or so away from where the tornado hit, and he shared his harrowing experience with us. And he's going to talk about that when we get back.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.